Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. Thanks for joining me this week. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I introduced you to Peg Lynch, who is somebody who did 11,000 scripts, and nobody knew who she was. This week, I want to talk about another writer who I just figured everybody knew, but apparently they don't, and that is Neil Simon. Now, a few weeks ago, I was watching Jeopardy! And there was a very simple question. It said something like Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker are starring in Plaza Suite, which was a big hit play from this playwright. Nobody even rang in. I was ready to kill myself. You know, Neil Simon passed away in 2018, okay? So it's not like he's been gone for 72 years or anything. He was on this earth for 91 years, and he only passed away 4 years ago. And yet, here we are in 2022, and three Brainiac Jeopardy contestants, who are all like in their 30s and 40s. It's not like they were nine. None of them even rang in and knew that Neil Simon did Plaza Suite. So, okay, I think we need to devote some time to Neil Simon. Okay, now, obviously, it is the curse of comedy that it can become dated. Now, less so with music. You know, Sondheim has songs that he wrote 50 years ago that still sound very fresh, and I think people are going to remember Stephen Sondheim long after they remember Neil Simon, which really isn't fair. But it's interesting. On Broadway now, there is, as we mentioned in that Jeopardy question, a revival of Plaza Suite, which was a play originally, I think, like 1966, 1967. It's the one where there are three vignettes all in the same suite in the Plaza Hotel. Well, the reviews were savage. And most of the reviews said the same thing. This is old. This is musty. This is dated. No one can relate to this. My God, it's from a different era. Why are they doing this? The reviews were terrible, like I said. But the box office? The box office has been great. People still are laughing at those old, musty jokes. And when I was back in New York in May, I wanted to see it too. And I'll be honest with you, I looked at the ticket price and I went, yikes, really? For that? For Plaza Suite? I've seen Plaza Suite. I'm not going to spend that kind of money for tickets to Plaza Suite. But a lot of people are, and it's doing very well. Like I said, it's still getting laughs. So comedy may not be fully appreciated by critics, but audiences still flock to them. Now, anyone who has read my blog knows that I've always been a fan. In fact, through his work, he has very much been a mentor. I have read all of the Neil Simon plays, even some of the later flops. There are a number of volumes, two volumes in particular, that have most of his plays, and I recommend that. And I still will pick them up and read them again. You know, there's such a great flow to them. They're so well written. They're so funny. The characters are so well drawn that every so often, just as a refresher, it's good for me to go back and reread some of Neil Simon. I actually got to know the man a little bit in the 90s, casually. I'll talk about that later on in the podcast. And I hosted the Neil Simon Film Festival on Turner Classic Movies. So let's talk a little bit about who Neil Simon was and what he accomplished. Like I said, he died. He was 91. He was born on July 4th, 1927 in the Bronx. He wrote more than 30 plays, and he was also involved in rewriting and punching up other plays. So from 39, that goes up to 49 plays, including some things you've heard of like Chorus Line. He also wrote close to 30 screenplays. He has received more Oscar and Tony nominations than any other writer. And so you figure, all right, this is the most successful playwright and screenwriter, for that matter, of the last half of the 20th century. I think we need to still remember who he is only 4 years after his death. So he started out in the Bronx, and he has an older brother named Danny, who was a writer, and he looked up to Danny, and he too, like I used to read Neil Simon, he used to read Kaufman and Hart and Benchley and a lot of other humorists along the way. And his brother Danny found his way into the industry, and I think he was writing some jokes for comedians and some radio stuff and some advertising. And he took Neil along, and the two of them wrote together from time to time. Not sure why exactly they split, but Neil went off to write for television. And so in the late 50s, he was a writer of many episodes of The Phil Silvers Show, of Bilko. That's right. Neil Simon wrote Bilko. He also was involved in Your Show of Shows, which was the Sid Caesar variety show. And to this day, it's like the Mount Rushmore of comedy writers worked on that staff. In addition to Neil Simon, you also had Carl Reiner, Larry Gelbart, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen. So you're talking the high rent district, and Neil Simon was part of that. He also did a Jerry Lewis special. He came out to California to do a Jerry Lewis special. And he had a pretty good career in television, but television, basically by the mid to late 50s, was all starting to move from New York to California. And after spending a little time in California back then, Neil did not want to move out here. And he also had this dream of becoming a successful playwright. Now, you have to look back at the late 50s and realize that even though you're writing for television, there was way more prestige writing for the theater. And back in those days, comedy plays were still getting on Broadway. And if you were the playwright of a successful one or two, you could make a ton of money. Also remember that television back in those days was not very sophisticated. If you wanted to write sophisticated comedy, if you wanted to write witty banter, you had to do it for the theater. Because if you're going to write for television, with some rare exceptions like the Bilko show, which was very stylized, but by and large, television back in those days was, when you think of sitcoms, Gilligan's Island, and crap like that, Beverly Hillbillies. So there was not an awful lot of chance to write sophisticated comedy. If you wanted to do that, well, back in those days, you did Broadway. Things certainly shifted years later, and you look at shows like Cheers and Frasier and Seinfeld, and you find that a lot of the would-be playwrights figured, you know what? They're not making those kind of plays anymore on Broadway. But I could go out to California and I could write for Frasier and I could basically do the same thing but have my work seen by 30 million people and make a lot more money. So there are very few comic playwrights still left. But back in those days, we're talking 1959, 1960, well, things went in the other direction. So he came up with a play, and the play was called Come Blow Your Horn, and it was semi-autobiographical about a young guy moving in with his older, hipper brother. He wrote 20 separate versions of this play. It had gone to different producers who gave him a lot of notes, different directors who gave him a lot of notes. Again, he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't take any playwriting classes. He learned how to write plays by writing this play. And finally, after like 3 years and 20 full drafts, he got it on Broadway. It lasted 678 performances. Now, you might think, okay, he had a hit play on Broadway, and now he's on his way. Well, it wasn't exactly a hit. It kind of got middling reviews, and business was so-so, and it really didn't look as though it was going to last very long at all until Groucho Marx went to see it one night. And Groucho loved it and thought it was hilarious, and he commented about that in one of the columns, Walter Winchell, or one of the columns of the day, and that turned things around. It's like when people said, wow, Groucho thinks this is the funniest comedy in years, they went to see it, and eventually it did kick in and become somewhat of a hit. Enough for him to write his second play. And it was this play, number two, that really was the launching pad. And that was Barefoot in the Park. Now, Barefoot in the Park is one of my favorite Neil Simon plays. And I will admit that, yeah, it is kind of dated. I mean, it's about a young couple just married, and they live in a fifth floor cheesy walk up in New York. Again, semi-autobiographical, but it was very funny. And he took a chance on a new director, and that director was Mike Nichols. Barefoot in the Park was the very first thing that Mike Nichols had ever directed, after, of course, being part of the comedy team of Nichols and May and having spent all that time with Second City and various improv groups in Chicago. And one thing that Mike Nichols chose to do in directing, which was a little bit different than the norm on Broadway at the time, was he told the actors, play the reality, not wind up for the jokes. Because prior to Barefoot in the Park, you knew a comedy because the actors were up there just landing on those jokes and selling them like crazy. And by and large, the comedies were a little broad, but in this case, and the actors were Elizabeth Ashley and Robert Redford. How anybody makes Robert Redford funny, I don't know. Terrific actor. I love him. Great-looking guy. But funny? No. No, not Robert Redford. So anyway, throughout the course of rehearsal, Nichols just kept having them play the reality, telling them the laughs are there, the laughs will come. And indeed, they did. And although it's not mentioned that often, Barefoot in the Park really was a shift in style for comedy plays on Broadway. Then he did The Odd Couple. This was 1965. Barefoot in the Park was 1963, and it lasted for numerous years. The Odd Couple, again, Danny, his brother, sort of lived this. I guess he had gotten divorced, and he was living with a guy who was very fastidious, and Neil said, Danny, this is a play. You got to write this play. This is a natural. So Danny Simon started writing the play and just couldn't do it, just couldn't get through it. And finally, he said to Neil, you want to take a crack at it? It's all yours. So Neil Simon wrote the play by himself, but credit to Neil Simon, he also gave his brother a certain percentage of the profits of The Odd Couple. The interesting thing about The Odd Couple, well, there's a lot of interesting things, but the main one for me was it starred Walter Matthau and Art Carney originally, and Mike Nichols was the director. It's a three-act play. They had the table reading the first day. Act one, killed. Act two, killed. It looked like this was a juggernaut. Then they got to act three, and it bombed. And they were all looking at each other like, what just happened here? They thought, all right, well, let's take it out of town, and Neil is just going to rewrite it, and we will fix it. And they did. They took it out of town. They took it to Boston. And apparently, Neil was writing a new third act practically every night. There were times when he would just take the train after the show, take the all-night train back in New York, go to his office, write up these pages, and take a noon train back to Boston. And this just kept going on, and with zero success. And finally, and by the way, you got Neil Simon and Mike Nichols. You got some brain trust here working on this problem. And finally, it was a theater critic in Boston who kind of made an offhanded comment that earlier in the play, you meet the Pigeon Sisters, who were very funny and lived in the building. And the critic said, God, you know, I'd sure like to see the Pigeon Sisters come back. They were really fun. It's like a light bulb went off. It's like, oh, God, yes, bring back the Pigeon Sisters. Neil did. Third act went through the roof. And the rest is history. But it is not the history necessarily that you think it is. You would imagine, based on all of the talk and success of Odd Couple, The Odd Couple was like a huge hit that ran for 15 years, that it was like, you know, Phantom of the Opera or Cats or Wicked or something. No, it really didn't. Why? Well, Walter Matthau, and this has been talked about in a number of books, was a giant fucking asshole. And he drove Art Carney so nuts that Carney eventually had a breakdown. After a while, Carney quit, Matthau quit. They brought in other cast members. The other casts weren't the same draw. And eventually the play closed. So, yeah, it played for a year and won a number of Tonys. Neil Simon won a Tony for writing The Odd Couple. But was The Odd Couple just that mega hit like Jersey Boys or one of those shows that still playing on the Great White Way today? No, not at all. Neil's business manager made a disastrous decision. Paramount came after him and wanted the movie rights and TV rights to The Odd Couple and Barefoot in the Park. Now, let me just back up a second and say there was a movie version of Come Blow Your Horn. It was awful. It's supposed to be about two Jewish brothers and Jewish parents that come, and it starred Frank Sinatra and Tony Bill. And Neil didn't write it. It was written by Norman Lear, of all people, and directed by Bud Yorkin, and was terrible. I saw it again when I was doing the Neil Simon Film Festival, and it is absolutely terrible. And the lesson that Neil learned from that experience was from then on, he wrote every one of his screenplays. So he got, I don't know, $100,000, $150,000 for each of those two plays, Barefoot in the Park and Odd Couple, just for the rights, and he would be paid extra, obviously, to write the screenplays. But those two properties, especially The Odd Couple, made a gazillion dollars for Paramount, notably the television series. And for a long time, Neil Simon refused to even watch the television series. And it's understandable. I mean, the guy was pissed. Look at all of the money that everybody else was making off of his play except him. I will say that towards the end of the run, I guess his daughters were saying, "Dad, it's really a good show." It was Gary Marshall and Jerry Belson who did it, and eventually, I guess Neil sampled it and went, "Yeah, okay, it's actually pretty good." And I think he even did a cameo, a brief cameo in an episode of The Odd Couple. Okay, more with Neil Simon when we continue right after this. Today's episode is sponsored by PayPal Honey. So what is Honey? Well, it is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes, and it applies the best ones it finds to your cart. It supports over 30,000 stores online. They range from sites that have gaming products to fashion brands to even food delivery. It's very simple. You're shopping online. You go to the checkout page, and then the Honey button drops down. All you do is click apply coupons. You wait a couple of seconds. It does its thing. And all of a sudden, you see your total goes down and down and down as it finds and applies the coupons that are appropriate to your sale. Wow. Now, I used it recently when I was in Cape May. I bought a beach chair. I bought an umbrella. I was there for like 2 weeks, so I was going to use the beach a lot. And I saved $26 thanks to Honey. It was great. And again, it is free. So if you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on savings. It's literally free. It installs in just a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this humble podcast. Now, I never recommend something I don't use, and I do use Honey. It's free. Why would I not? Anyway, get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Levine. Once again, that's joinhoney.com/Levine. Okay, more with me. There's one movie that he wrote that I loved, and he actually claims it's his favorite screenplay too. And it's a movie you rarely see. It's called Heartbreak Kid, and there was a remake of it by the Farrelly brothers that was just a piece of shit. But the original, starring Charles Grodin, directed by Elaine May, and written by Neil Simon, is a very dark, very funny movie. I mentioned the writing style. Well, all of his plays were very character-driven, and usually they dealt with very relatable and serious subjects. As he said, he wants the audience to laugh to avoid weeping. And I don't remember who exactly had this line, but I've stolen it and used it a lot. When people ask me, do you ever write dramas? You know, you just write comedy. Do you ever write dramas? I say, all of my plays are dramas. It's just that people laugh. That was really the case with him. His humor is very sophisticated. It's very urban, usually set in New York, and generally Jewish. Back in the days when that was kind of in vogue. He deals with marital issues. He deals with infidelity. He deals a lot with family. Like I said, on a number of occasions, a lot of his plays are semi-autobiographical, and he had the trilogy Brighton Beach Memoirs, Biloxi Blues, and Broadway Bound, which is about a Neil Simon-esque character growing up. He also wrote a play that he said it was the hardest play he ever had to write, and he would never do another one, and he was true to his word. Rumors. Rumors was a flat-out farce, and he commented that it was so hard to write a farce, to keep all of those elements going one after another for a full 90-minute, two-hour play. He did it, like bucket list, check, and that was the last time Neil Simon ever wrote a straight farce. He never worked with an outline, which I always found mystifying. And I got a chance to ask him about it. And I said, how does that happen where you just sit and start writing? I spend a couple of months working on the outline and the character development and where it's going to go and trying to find some twists and turns so that it's surprising. You just write fade in and away you go. And he said, yeah, he does, but he says, I have a drawer full of plays that were stalled after 30 pages. So you do pay a price. Sometimes it works out great, and other times you just hit a wall, and after 30 pages or maybe a month or two's work, you realize, this is nothing, and he throws it away. The critical response to Neil Simon in his day, again, the most successful playwright. The reviews were always mixed. Now, comedy is always looked down upon by serious artists and serious critics. And they would always point out to the fact that, oh, yes, well, there's all these gags. Oh, it's just a comedy. It's just a string of gags. And they, not all, but many, basically dismissed his work. The fact that his work is still being done 50 years later, notwithstanding, the critics still never really gave him the respect he deserved until he wrote a play called Lost in Yonkers, which again, semi-autobiographical, but it was more dramatic, and he won the Pulitzer Prize for drama with that play. Well, now, all of a sudden, he's a genius. Now, all of a sudden, he's grown as a playwright. He's now brilliant. Okay, same guy. But going back to when his work was getting mixed reviews, Walter Carr, a critic, the New York Times, actually, tried to rationalize why Simon's work had been underrated. So this was his quote. He says, "Because Americans have always tended to underrate writers who make them laugh, Neil Simon's accomplishments have not gained as much serious critical praise as they deserve. His best comedies contain not only a host of funny lines, but numerous memorable characters and an incisively dramatized set of beliefs that are not without merit. Simon is, in fact, one of the finest writers of comedy in American literary history." Okay, I will take that review. But it took until 1991 and Lost in Yonkers before the critics finally gave him his due. A little bit about his personal life. You might assume from this that this guy led a perfectly charmed life. Well, you would be wrong. He has had his heartaches as well. He has been married, ready, 5 times. That's right, 5 times. But his first marriage, when he was very young, was really the love of his life. Her name was Joan, and tragically, she died at the age of 41 of bone cancer. And I don't think he has ever really recovered. Again, 4 more wives as a result. He also needed a kidney transplant in 2004. So I got to know him a little bit in the 90s. We worked out at the same gym. And he was very friendly. He was also casting a play. And I knew that one of the actors who was up for one of the main roles was Matthew Lesher, who had been in Almost Perfect, our show with Nancy Travis. Speaking of things no one remembers anymore. So I went to Neil and I introduced myself and I said, "I know that one of the contenders for this role is Matthew Lesher. I was the showrunner of a show that he was on, and he was terrific. He could do comedy, could do drama, could sing, physical comedy, he could do everything. This guy is fantastic." Well, he hired Matt, and he was thrilled. And he came up to me and thanked me for recommending Matt Lesher. And as a result of that, we kind of became casual friends. We would, talk about various moments in his career. Things like I said, asking about outlines. I also got a chance in the 80s. He didn't remember this. I can't believe it, but he didn't remember it. In the 80s, I was having lunch one day. My partner David Isaacs and I were in the Fox commissary and we're having lunch with Larry Gelbart. And Neil Simon comes in to the restaurant. And Larry spots him and, "Hey, Doc." And Simon comes over, and Larry invites him to join us, which he does. So imagine, for me, young comedy writer, having lunch with Neil Simon and Larry Gelbart. I'm like, oh, my God. This is like one of the great moments of my life. But, of course, for Neil Simon, he didn't remember it at all. Very pleasant, very low-key. One time I saw him, because he moved to Los Angeles, which is kind of ironic, after not wanting to move from New York. And, of course, he had a number of funny quotes about the difference between L.A. and New York. something like it's always 78 in L.A., but there's only 78 interesting people in L.A., quotes like that. He moved out here. He was living like four blocks from me, and he was writing his play out of an apartment on Beverly Glen in West Los Angeles. And instead of taking plays out of town to New Haven and Boston and Philadelphia, he would mount his plays originally in Los Angeles, usually at the Taper Forum or the Amundsen. And one thing about Neil Simon that I totally admire, something that I've always done, television, you have to do it, is constantly rewriting. And what I would do is anytime there was a new Neil Simon play that would open in Los Angeles, I would try to go to it one or two times. And invariably, there would be Neil sitting in the back row taking notes. Then I would try to go to New York a few months later once the play actually was locked and on Broadway. So I would go and see the changes and how the play improved and how it was sharpened. And, oh, yeah, he took out that scene. And, oh, that's interesting. He didn't die in the original. It was very instructive. If you want to know more about Neil Simon, he wrote a 2-volume autobiography that was really good. The first is called Rewrites. And the second is The Play Goes On, and I recommend it. Theaters around the world are still doing his work. His movies pop up all the time. He deserves to be remembered. And one final note on Neil Simon. Like I said, I hosted the Neil Simon Film Festival on Turner Classic Movies. And I imagine that Neil, who was still alive at the time, was, I think, living in Palm Springs at that time. And obviously, he heard about the festival and I'm sure tuned in one or two times. And he probably thought to himself, I wonder who they got, what heavyweight they got to do the intros and outros and be the host of my film festival. And he tuned in and he looked and went, what? The schmuck from the gym? That's the best they could do? The schmuck from the gym? Well, the schmuck from the gym is his biggest fan. And hopefully, if you are not a fan of Neil Simon or you don't know that much about Neil Simon, that this podcast has motivated you to see more, to read more, and find out more about this extraordinary talent. And that will do it for this edition of Hollywood and Levine. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller, John Wolfert. And if you have any questions or you want to reach out to me for any reason, I got a lot of really nice emails on the Peg Lynch podcast episode. Anyway, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I am also available on Twitter @KenLevine. I am on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. Again, I want to reach 1 million followers, and I'm at 1,250 people. Come on. You're letting me down here. I usually show some of my cartoons, so if you want to see what that aspect of my life is like, follow me on Instagram. Okay, that'll do it for this week. Thanks so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week right here on
Hollywood and Levine.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.